You know, I hear the Fortress of Doom is quite nice this time of year. It's Snuscapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo Library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly. We judge them harshly. We rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keese.
And I am ME0. I think I went into kind of a robot mode there.
Oh, that's okay. And folks, I'm going to put all my cards on the table real fast here, because we try not to talk too much before we get on mic about these games, because we don't want to, you know, blow any good conversation starters, you know, on just us talking and, you know, leave it out of the podcast. But
sure,
the whole thing about playing them briefly, judging them harshly, well, playing them briefly anyway, that is maybe more true for me in this episode than it has been in a while. But, we'll discuss what that means maybe, but it's okay. I still feel like I can talk about these, you know, because I am a guy and I am infinitely confident in my ability to talk about things I don't know about.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. we're in December 93 still. This will be our last featured games episode for December 1993. After this, it's over to the wrap, the quick fire round of talking about all the games we didn't think warranted a featured episode. But we do have three more games today that we're going to give the full treatment to. What do we have for the lovely people at home this time, Chase Keese?
Well, today, ME0, for the people, we have Soldiers of Fortune, Metal Marines, and Lufia and the Fortress of Doom. Let me try that again. Lufia and the Fortress of Doom.
All right.
And we'll just get into it then, right?
Let's just do it. Let's call up our Merc Squad and go blast some big frogs.
Yes.
With Soldiers of Fortune.
Soldiers of Fortune, this game comes to us from actually a couple of people, I believe. Renegade Software, I think, maybe made the original game, and then it was ported by Spectrum Holobyte.
More importantly, the original game was made by the Bitmap Brothers. That's the development house.
Oh, right, yes, the Bitmap Brothers.
That did this, which are kind of a famous UK-based software development team. And this game actually goes by another name on outside of its US release, frankly much cooler name, the Chaos Engine.
Yeah, I honestly don't know why they changed it, because
it's mysterious. That's such a better name.
Yeah.
And more representative of what this game is, because I think that the name Soldiers of Fortune probably gave us both some bad expectations of this that are not really reasonable to have.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, completely foolish idea to rename this the generic and maybe somewhat problematic Soldiers of Fortune when Chaos Engine was already right there, and
yeah,
is a fine name.
But it's a fine game.
Yeah, you know, so this game, it's a top-down shooter, kind of in the vein of, like, you know, a Smash TV or that game that was the sequel to Smash TV that I can't remember the name of right now.
Mm-hmm. Would you say it's also got maybe a bit of a Zombies Ate My Neighbors going on here?
It's got a little bit of a Zombies Ate My Neighbors going on here. Yeah. Yeah. It's also got a lot of Gauntlet going on here.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
So this is a game, you know, where you play as one of six mercenaries who are weird in this weird post-apocalyptic world where the Chaos Engine is creating mutants. Is that the story? I think
It's more, I think it's like there's mutants, but there's also time travel. Like, it's like time has become like all jumbled up because of this device called the Chaos Engine. And you are a mercenary who has been like hired to I don't really know what you've been hired to do, honestly, but you are there to shoot a bunch of, they look like mutants. There's also big frogs and a bunch of other stuff. And just in the first couple of levels and, you know, the six mercenaries are all real rough looking dudes, that, have a real kind of like 2000 AD sort of look to them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really kind of, I think, this is a premise where, like, kind of the sky's the limit for whatever they want to put into this thing, you know?
Yeah. So an interesting thing about this game is that it is meant to be played with two characters. So even if you do not have a second player to play with, they will give you an AI-controlled character as the second player.
Yep.
You do not play this game solo. And this game is probably a lot more fun with two players, I would imagine.
I would think so, yes. It's quite, I think it is quite fun with one player, but I think that I can already see how the fun, like, kind of goes up exponentially when you add a second actual human poking around with you in these levels. And it's level-based, you know. There's basically each level has a series of, pylons or towers or something you have to activate before the exit to the level will open. So you make your way through these kind of maze-like levels that have, you know, keys you get to unlock areas and secret rooms and power-ups. And by the end of it, hopefully you have found all of the things so you don't have to backtrack through the level. But all of the six mercenaries all have different weapons and different special weapon power-ups that they get. So there is quite a bit of variety in, like, how you can, you know, in like kind of how it feels when you have two different, you know, mercenaries on the field together. But yeah, I think it would be really fun with a second person. It's all right with one person, I would say.
Yeah, and they do implement an interesting mechanic when you're playing this one player where you can increase the other character's wisdom, which will make the AI more effective, which is, that's kind of an interesting little way of going about that. Couple of things that I got some big problems with this game. First of all, this is not a twin stick shooter, and it feels like it really ought to be.
It does have, you can, like, adjust your firing angle at, like, 45 degree angles with the shoulder buttons, which I do like that. But yeah, I think that it's kind of interesting because I think that this could actually be a twin stick shooter with very little trouble. Because as far as I can tell, the only things that you need to be able to do with the buttons, aside from move, are fire your main weapon and fire your special weapon. And those could both be on the shoulder buttons. Yeah. So, yeah, I would really like to have seen a version of this. I suspect this is like, because this was originally, was this originally a microcomputer game, like an Amiga game? I know it's British, so, you know, it you know, obviously did not originate on, like, consoles. And I don't know, I can't imagine why they would have chosen this over a twin stick option if one was even something you could mock up using a keyboard and joystick.
I don't know. Like, in 93, according to Moby Games, it came out on Genesis, Atari ST, Amiga, and the SNES. So,
okay.
So I don't know which one was technically first, but I'm going to guess it was probably developed with all of them in mind.
Probably. I mean, the Amiga had that weird, awful sounding, to me at least, controller that had a joystick and one button on it. So I have to imagine that this is essentially like an adaptation of the, this is a control system that could have also worked on the Amiga, with, like, not that much. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that this would be, you know, smoother to play if you had essentially just Smash TV style movement and shooting here, you know?
Yeah.
It's not terrible. Like, it's not, you know, it's not awful to play it like this, but it definitely could be better.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing about this is I feel like the hitbox around my character was just, like, a little bit outside the sprite itself. Did you get that feeling?
Yeah, I did kind of get that feeling. I felt like I had to leave a lot of space between myself and specifically those frog enemies, yes, who have a really fast and wide ranging jump on them. I mean, I got used to it. Like the controls, I got used to it. But yeah, I would have liked it if the hitbox had been smaller and let me feel a little more nimble.
Yeah, maybe everything in this game should have been scaled down a little bit, because like I definitely got hit by a frog on occasion that like just jumped at me from off screen that I could not have reacted to the first time.
No, it's kind of interesting because this game's levels are not timed, and they feel almost like this feels like the kind of game where the levels would be timed, but like once I realized that I could take this kind of slow and like I was able to be a little bit, you know, just kind of like edging forward a little bit through the levels, I did survive for longer. I don't know that it was more fun that way, but I did do it. So, you know, it maybe that's the intent. I'm not sure that's what, like, this is a very arcadey feeling game. Like this literally does feel kind of like Gauntlet. I do like playing it at a faster pace, even though, yeah, you run into situations like that where like everything's like a little, the screen's like a little too zoomed in. So it's really hard to see some stuff when it comes in from very quickly from off screen, like those frogs.
I felt like maybe my character was just a little bit too squishy at the beginning of the game.
Yeah. Because
you're only given like two or three pips of health in your,
which does vary based on which mercenary you use, but it's never more than three to start with.
Right. And ideally, you know, you get all the money, you collect all this money from taking out enemies, and then every other level you get to upgrade your character with that money. And
yeah.
I thought it was weird that it was every other level instead of every level, because I don't know. I just felt like I was – like the game was very quickly outpacing me, you know,
in terms of
like, you know, how strong my character was. So
I get that, yeah.
Yeah.
I would really like it if this game had some more options, honestly. Like I would really like it if this had selectable difficulty modes or like an adjustable number of lives, you know. Like, I think one of the things that contributes to that extremely arcade-like feel is that it really gives you no options at all. There's basically, there's just, you know, one player start with you know, with computer co-op or two player, and that's it. Otherwise, you're off to the races. I would like it if it had continues. I think it's just, it's got, like, that Euro game real like unforgiving feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that as a Euro game, I like this much more than like any of like the platformers we've played from European companies. I think this is a place where the aesthetic predilections of those developers work for me. So, you know, I think this game is fun to look at. I think it has a lot of fun voice clips, and I like the overall vibe of it. I just wish that it liked me a little more, you know.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, no, I this game's all right. It is perfectly fine,
right,
perfectly serviceable. But you know, you can definitely see where it might have been a little bit better if they could have just added this, or could have been a little bit better if it controlled like this. And you know, it's a shame because it feels like there's a way better game waiting to happen there.
Yep, I agree. Yeah.
But again, it's not bad. And if you've got somebody to play it with, it's like, you know, like we said before, it's probably a lot more fun.
Yeah, I would think so. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if you want, you know, like a fun co-op shooter, like a thing that to me feels like it would exist as a playable video game in the Gears of War universe, you know, then I would recommend this game for you then.
You have anything else you want to say about this one before we go to the list?
I really don't. I'm happy to kick it over to the list now and find a place for our Soldiers of Fortune on it.
My immediate instinct is to say C. It's a decent game with a lot of flaws that, you know, like could have been overcome with just a few little tweaks.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Do you think it's maybe good enough to get into the B tier, or do you think it
There were moments when I was playing it that where I thought it might be a B-tier game, but ultimately, no. By the end of each time I spent with it, I ended up feeling like it should be kind of just right in the middle there. Like I said, if you want like a co-op shooter, this is a pretty good option, but it does have some issues, and for all I know, there are other better versions of this game because it did come out on a number of different platforms. So, yeah, I would say C is a good place for it.
All right. Well, there we go. Soldiers of Fortune, a.k.a. Chaos Engine, is going in the C tier.
All right.
And I guess with that, we'll move on to our next game, which is called Metal Marines.
Yeah, who made this one?
Yeah, this is just a Namco joint. You know, you guys know Namco. They're the Pac-Man people.
That's right. Someday they'll be the Tekken people and the Ridge Racer people.
Ridge Racer.
But right now, they're the Metal Marines people.
You know, I will say, I didn't know what to expect from this one. I thought maybe military stuff. And I was right. Wasn't necessarily expecting Gundams, but I guess, you know,
But it is Gundams. It is Gundams. Extremely Gundams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Entirely like mid-90s off-brand Gundam is what we've got here in the form of a turn-based strategy game with real-time elements. What did you think of this one? I'm really curious about that.
Okay, so this is not my kind of thing for multiple reasons. Mm-hmm. First of all, and I know everybody's going to get on my case about this, I've just never been a fan of Gundam. Mm-hmm. I don't find the designs of the robots appealing. It's like, okay, your robot is very spiky. We get it, all right? It's just never been my thing. And then strategy stuff also... not really my thing. Mm-hmm. So I barely touched this one, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I got into the actual gameplay and they're like, hey, put down some bases. And I'm like, okay, what makes a place better for a base than other places? Oh, there's mm-hmm. a lot of stuff already here. Is this my stuff? I don't know if this is my stuff.
Right.
Am I putting up the bases to attack this stuff that's right here? Like, it gave me no context for what these bases are for, mm-hmm. whose stuff this is that's already here. Mm-hmm. And if it is my stuff, where is the enemy stuff? It gave me nothing.
Yeah.
At that point, I was just like, I don't think I'm even capable of playing this. This mm-hmm. this may just be an like a U-tier game for me. Then I watched like a Let's Play of it because like honestly, the instruction manual didn't do much to help me make heads or tails of this.
The instruction manual is detailed, but not in a way that's helpful, I found.
Yeah. I watched a Let's Play of like the first couple missions, and then I started getting it. And then I was like, okay, you know what? This looks all right. Mm-hmm. This still does not look like a game I have any interest in playing, but mm-hmm. from the outside looking in as a strategy game, this one looks okay. Like, yeah. I don't see anything wrong with it. It might be a little bit primitive for folks, you know, in a modern context, but I don't know. It seems okay, but again, I am just a terrible person to judge this kind of game.
So for one thing, I wouldn't say I'm a really well-versed Gundam fan. Like, I haven't watched every Gundam series out there, but I have watched some of them, and I do really like the ones I've watched. So this does appeal to me. I find the sort of overall setup of this, I find the aesthetic, everything extremely attractive. And I am enough of a fan of this kind of strategy game that I was able to sink a bit of time into this. And I once I got a handle on it, I did enjoy this. I do think this game desperately needs just like a training mission, like a tutorial mission that just walks you through the steps of what a battle in this game look like. It's not actually that complicated. It has a bunch of options it presents you with that give the impression that it's fairly complicated, but really it's not. All this game does, though, is start you up, and there is an option before the mission to get essentially a briefing. And those briefings are useful if you already know how to play the game, because they give you a specific goal for this battle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the first one, it's like, yeah, so it looks like the enemy has a bunch of missiles here. So you should build a bunch of anti-aircraft missiles and then try to take out their missiles as quickly as you can. And what that means is, you know, the battle starts, you have a big sort of environment area that is just your area, and you can put down your bases wherever you want. You get three of those in the first mission, and then you can spend money to set down other kinds of structures, whether that's missile launchers or energy factories or what have you, or to make metal marines, which are the off-brand Gundams that you use in this game. And then at any point during the time when you have control, you can launch an attack on the enemy stronghold. And the enemy stronghold is depicted as like a grid that is at first not filled in at all. So you kind of have to play a little bit of a game of battleship and maybe send some missiles over, maybe send a couple of your metal marines over to attack. Over the first little bit of time as you do that, you get more information filled in on your map about where the important things on the enemy's grid are, basically. And then at any point, the enemy can also launch attacks on you, which usually involve them shooting some missiles, which hopefully your anti-aircraft missiles can shoot down before they hit your resources. And then they will send, in like kind of a phase two of it, they'll send down their metal marines to attack your stuff. This is just where it starts out. So I really wish there was just like a basic training mission that you could optionally do before you get started with this, because if the game explained that all to you, I think you're off to the races with this thing. Like, I think this is a game that would be very comfortable sitting alongside, you know, a lot of the like Game Boy Advance strategy games, you know, which is sort of where I'm at with strategy games. That's the kind of one that I want to play. So yeah, I think that the setup for this is kind of frustrating in how vague it is, including, like you said, the instruction manual, which I think gives you a lot of details, but just not really a grasp of the overall structure of how this thing's supposed to work. But once you can get over that and learn how the levels are supposed to be played, and if you like what this is doing, you know, in terms of vibe, then yeah, this is good. Like, this gave me a fair bit of nostalgia, not so much for games from this time period, but for a lot of the like Japanese pop culture stuff that I was starting to eat up around like the mid to late 90s, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that first mission, judging from the Let's Play, it looks like it was made to be really simple.
It is really simple, yeah. But you don't know that if you are just starting this thing up cold, right?
Right. But like, I do remember thinking, you know, when I saw the Let's Play, like, I really wish the game maybe just played this first mission for you. Yes. Or told you exactly what to do for this first mission, just to give you a handle on like what the flow of this game is like.
This game needs the same kind of introductory mission thing that SimCity on the Super Nintendo has. Like, that's exactly what it needs, you know?
Yeah, I did think it was interesting that, like, there aren't just, like, you know, build phases and battle phases that are turn-based. You just
go for it, yeah.
Yeah, you can just keep building out whatever you want and then choose when you want to attack, but also you just have to be aware that like the enemy can do the same thing. They can just say like, okay, I'm attacking you now. And now everything freezes.
Yeah.
And you kind of see like what the results of that attack are. And you just have to hope that your defenses hold up, mm-hmm. But it is neat. I think this is a game I would enjoy playing with someone. Like, I would probably enjoy collaborating on a run through of this with you if you were the one at the controls.
That makes sense. Yeah,
I would probably have a lot of fun just like contributing like suggestions and stuff and seeing mm-hmm. how everything played out more than actively just trying to play this by myself.
For sure.
But you know, like, the fact that I think I could have fun with this even in that way probably puts it a bit higher up in my book than your average strategy game might go. Although I don't know, like I just don't engage with them very much. So maybe this isn't, you know, an amazing one of those. I don't really have a good barometer for it.
It seems pretty approachable to me. It's frustrating because I think the gameplay is approachable, but the setup for it is very basic in a way that hides that from you. So I was pleased that I was able to get into this. I think that, you know, the worry with these kinds of things for me is that I will just load them up and be instantly overwhelmed with options and no idea like what I'm even supposed to be doing to play this like effectively, which is the experience I had with a lot of like the Koei games, you know? And this is just on a much lower level of complexity than that. And I was relieved to see that, but I also had in a lot of ways a similar initial reaction to it that you did. I just sort of like bulldozed my way through it until I got a grasp of what it was actually about. So
I think the game and its manual like presented is a much crunchier, let's say, game than what it actually is.
Definitely.
And that I think is to its detriment, because, you know, people who actually want that might be disappointed to find out what this game actually is. And people who want something a little bit easier to get into, a little easier to follow,
might get scared off.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the game did a pretty bad job in sort of presenting what it is, but it is a good, simple-ish kind of strategy game once you know what's actually going on.
That's where I'm at with it. So I don't know. I don't really have much else to say about it. Do you want to go over to the list and try to find a place for this thing?
I'm kind of once again looking at the C tier for this one.
Because,
you know, I don't, it's one of these, you know, it seems perfectly fine. It's not going to ruin your weekend, probably, as long as you've got maybe a Let's Play to watch.
I think if this game had a really solid tutorial, it would be an easy B, but because it doesn't, it is a C to me as well. Like, it's a little too, I think everything around that gameplay is like a little too bare bones to really justify putting it higher.
Congratulations then, Metal Marines. You're going to be sitting here in the C tier with the Soldiers of Fortune. Maybe
you guys can collaborate.
Maybe they want to pilot a Gundam. I don't know.
Yeah. I wouldn't let any of those freaks behind the wheel of a Gundam, honestly, behind the sticks or whatever the Gundam has. So,
all right. Well, just got one game left to go. That's two down, one to go. That's how it works here. We're going to talk about Lufia and the Fortress of Doom. So this is an RPG, JRPG. This is from developer Neverland Company or Neverland Studios. I'm not sure which it actually is supposed to be. I believe they are mostly known for the Rune Factory series at this point.
Yes, that's correct. They, after a fashion, still exist or did exist up until fairly recently. But they are mostly known for having created the Rune Factory series. They before that, they did a fair number of different different games for like 16 and you know, up to the like the Wii era of game systems. But yeah, they actually did some other games that people might be familiar with outside of the Lufia and Rune Factory series. They did the Record of Lodos War game for the Dreamcast, which is kind of a cult classic. Yeah.
Yeah, a game I actually quite like.
Yeah, that's a good game. And a couple of Shining Force games as well. So yeah, they've been around, and their bones, I think, were kind of made with this game, Lufia and the Fortress of Doom, which in Japan was called Estopolis Denki, which means Biography of Estopolis.
All right.
Which I don't know what that is. I don't know if Estopolis is like the kingdom where this takes place or what, but it's Lufia and the Fortress of Doom here in the U.S. And there are more entries in the Lufia series than I thought there were.
Yeah, we'll be seeing another one of them eventually, I think.
We will, yes. Yeah, that's the one I knew about, Lufia and Lufia 2.
Oh, okay.
I did not know there were several additional Lufia games for, like, the DS. Interesting that this is, like, a whole... This series actually did continue on. So I want to ask you, I guess, how much time did you get to spend with this game?
I got through the sort of introductory dungeon.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to say... suffered through the story beats that happen after that, and then finally got control of the character, and then just got annihilated by monsters outside of the village, and that was pretty much my time with it.
Okay.
You know, we were just talking about a game that really needed an introductory mission. This game kind of has one.
Yeah, it has an interesting thing.
Has a pretty typical JRPG kind of thing going on where a bunch of legendary heroes did a thing 100 years ago, but you actually get to play as those legendary heroes 100 years ago in the first mission, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. You essentially get to see the climax of a different adventure at the start of this one.
And because you are playing as legendary heroes, they are already pretty kitted out and beefed up. So
they're like level 75. Yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of just get to take on these very powerful monsters and bosses without having to worry too much about screwing anything up, which gives you a lot of freedom to play around with the spells that you have.
Yep.
This, I think, is a very, very good way to introduce people to your RPGs. And I think this should have been done more back in the day.
I agree.
I thought this was very, very good and very clever.
Yeah.
So you play as these four heroes. They beat the bosses, but then, that was a trick. Actually, the bosses are fine, and now they're using magic, and now there's a magic thing. There's a lot of talk about synchronizing flows.
Yep.
and then everything explodes. But, you know, peace comes to the kingdom, but peace makes everyone weak, says a person who needs to get continuously punched in the face. Otherwise, they'll be weak if you don't do that. So, you know, if anyone says, oh, peace is bad because it makes people weak, just punch them in the face and don't ever stop. You're doing them a favor. You're helping them. Anyway.
They'll level up, so it's fine. Yeah.
We fast forward 90 years. Mm-hmm. We're in a quaint little village. We're playing as a little ragamuffin who you get to name.
Yep.
Who is not Lufia. Lufia is not the primary character you control in this game, much contrary to what the title of this game was leading me to believe, but that's fine. So you're playing as this guy who is a descendant of the hero Maxim, who was sort of the party leader from that group of legendary heroes you were playing as before.
Right.
He meets Lufia. We fast forward another 9 years. Now they are older and they have a relationship of sorts.
Yep.
Lufia likes making things with cinnamon.
So much cinnamon. So much cinnamon. Cinnamon so much tea, cinnamon pie. Yeah, it's really good, apparently. Yeah. But, man, I would try a second spice at some point, personally.
Yeah. Yeah. Cinnamon pork chops, cinnamon succotash. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so once all of this happens, like I can't stand the writing in this game. It's probably just, you know, great localization.
Probably not. I mean, this is kind of standard stuff for this is not that different from like a lot of, you know, games of this vintage. You know, it's kind of cutesy. It's kind of like I think that the character of Lufia comes off as really annoying here, unfortunately, in this first little bit.
Yeah.
I will say after you get through this first bit, it does pick up a bit and gets more engaging. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about like my reaction to it in a bit, but I do not have any, I'm not in any way surprised that this is sort of where the game like kind of lost you.
Yes. But like, so after doing all of this and then venturing out to, you know, the location that, you know, the story seems to be indicating I need to go to, you know, I got trashed by monsters. And I think the problem was that I wasn't using my 8-bit/16-bit RPG brain. And I forgot to just rummage through every single house in the village looking for better equipment and more money to buy better equipment.
I mean, the big thing you should do is go to the castle and talk to the princess, where she will give you 200 gold to go buy better equipment to go on this expedition. So, you can get a lot of healing items. You can get a lot of, I wish this game had like a prompt or something when you were next to a thing that had an item in it. But yeah, if you walk up to any like kind of bookcase or desk or anything in this and press the like talk button, there's a good chance you're going to get an item out of it. So that is an important thing to do here. That was sort of like a common design trope in these games, was just, you know, rummage through everything basically.
Yeah, that was definitely something I should have done. I mean, you know, it's a typical thing to do in a game like this. I knew that I should have done that, you know, and I would have been better prepared to go out and start fighting monsters.
Yeah.
Probably I could have actually made it to the second location within, you know, a few minutes or so, and it wouldn't have been that bad. Like, this game seems fine. It's just, you know, it's another one of these, and I don't know if it's doing anything particularly amazing here. It's really tough being just another JRPG on this system, because this system, as we have said many times, has some of the best JRPGs that have ever been made. That was my takeaway from this. Please tell me what your experience was.
I love this game.
Okay.
I think this game's wonderful. I think this game's great.
Okay.
I don't entirely disagree with the stuff you've said about it. So, okay, I was like an RPG kid. Like, I played a lot of these games. I didn't play this one specifically, but if I think back on like my time playing games in the 90s, a lot of my most treasured gaming memories are with this sort of scale of RPG. Like games like this, or Breath of Fire 3, or the Lunar games, you know, things that are, yeah, okay, it's not pushing technology in any particular way. It has a pretty standard, not terribly flashy look to it. But there is something about like the pace of it, the music, the graphics, and also I think the feel of the battle system in this, which I think is it's very standard, but I think it is a good one of these that comes together to like, I swear to God, I don't know that I've had the kind of nostalgic reaction I had to this game to any of the other games we've played for the Super Nintendo. Like, even ones that I did play and love as a child, like, this one hit me in a different way that just kind of, you know, recalled the entire summer that I spent doing nothing but playing Lunar the Silver Star Story for the PlayStation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I had a great time playing this, and I do think that this holds up well as a game in this genre at this time. Like, you know, yeah, it's not a Final Fantasy game, but it's part of a cohort of RPGs that I just find really pleasant and really kind of relaxing to play. And I love the music in this. I actually think the sprite work is really good. I think it's like very charming, and especially like the battle sprites, the way battles are depicted in this game, I think is pretty nice, because basically you get kind of like a Dragon Quest-y sort of thing where the monsters are kind of lined up at sort of the top of the screen. But then the sprites for your party member characters are in little boxes along the like kind of bottom half of the screen that has like their HP and MP and any like status effects they may have kind of contained in the box that they're standing in. And I just think it's like really good, really readable. And I do think that I sort of reflexively engaged in like a tiny bit of grinding at the start of this. Like, I got my guy, you know, a couple of levels up before I went into the cave that is sort of the first like thing you have to pass through. And I did go back to the village and like scour, you know, the area. There's a pretty troubling little bit where like one of the guards is straight up stalking a maid in the castle. Yo, that bit sucks.
Yeah.
Didn't like that at all. But you know, yeah, in terms of story events in this first couple hours of the game that I played, the main character who I keep calling the main character because he is entirely unnamed. You just put in a name for him, like you said. Has like a little fight with Lufia because she was going to make him a cinnamon pie. He finds out that a neighboring kingdom has been attacked by monsters and goes to that kingdom, finds that it has been straight up decimated by monsters, comes back, makes up with Lufia, and then they go back together. Lufia becomes like your second party member, and you go back, have a kind of essentially like a what I would call like a set fight with one of the big bad evil guys from the beginning of the game. The kind of fight where you are supposed to lose and the story continues on. And then you set off on the adventure proper to stop these guys. So, yeah, I mean, I would say, like I said, I don't actually disagree with like your assessment of the game. I think if you don't have that kind of nostalgia for this sort of game, it's a harder sell, but I do think it's a good one of these. And I found the pace and the way that it sort of gets you going with it really good. And I did find a lot of stuff about this really charming, even though I agree, like the writing is, you know, it's kind of whatever. And I think that honestly, both of the main characters come off pretty annoying at the start of this.
Yeah.
they get a little better once they get to talk to each other a little bit more. Lufia admits that, like, she isn't actually mad at him about the pie. She's mad at him about, like, not including her in, like, dangerous choices that he's making because she cares about him. You know, that makes me feel better about it. And, like, the main characters, like, insistence at the beginning of the game that like people are like too unwilling to entertain the idea that like danger could come. He starts to sound like less of a pill when there's actually a situation that you're dealing with, and he is kind of over his head as well. Say, like, if you've never played one of these kind of games before, oh yeah, you should definitely go play this one. But I should have played this one in the mid-90s, and it would have been one of my, like, you know, low-key favorite games, you know, of my childhood if I had done that. So I might play some more of this. Like, I really enjoyed the time I spent with it, and I think if you had the same kind of childhood playing these games but somehow missed this one. So, I mean... We will talk about where this should go on the list. I'm not going to stump for this one to be an A-tier game because I am aware that it's not, you know, so exceptional in any way. But I think that if you're like me, this is an A-tier game. So, yeah, okay. That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I will say, like, there are a couple things I thought were very cool. Like, I, you know, again, going back to like that introductory dungeon.
Yeah.
Those bosses are like very, very big and very cool.
Yeah,
looking.
Yeah, it's cool.
I like that. Something I liked less was the way that enemies are grouped into kinds, where like you've got like, oh, hey, there's two frogs, so that's a group that you can target, or you could target this spider.
Right.
What I was finding is if I targeted the frog group, I wouldn't always hit the same frog, meaning I was spreading out damage and making the battle last longer.
It's annoying, yeah.
Yeah.
It's also annoying that if you have people targeting the same enemy and that enemy dies, their attacks just sort of get blown, like they just get wasted. Not that this is making it any better, but this is just the way Dragon Quest did it. Mm-hmm. This is the way that selecting the enemies to attack in Dragon Quest games worked too. So like, it's not good, but it is. You can work with it. Like you can get over it, and like you just have to like internalize that that's the way it works. But yeah, it would just be better if it didn't work like that, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of a weird thing also with buying stuff. I don't know if you actually went to like the shop and encountered this, but you can only buy items in groups of 1, 4, or 10. You can't just like roll up a thing and, you know, be like, yeah, I want to buy like 6 of this.
Hmm.
So that's an odd thing as well. I do appreciate that in the shop menu for like the weapon and armor shop, you can compare what your stats will be for with these items instead of just seeing that it'll go up or go down. Not every game back then did that, so that's a pretty good thing as well. But yeah, there's just some weird, like, funky things here. Some of them are taken from other games, some of them seem unique to this one, and I don't really get why, if you were making a game fresh in 1993, and I think this did come out in 93 both in the US and Japan, why you would go for those choices over just like what Final Fantasy IV did, you know. Okay. But I really like this game. Playing it made me very happy, and I would recommend it to certain kinds of players very heartily.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm looking at the list right here, and I'm looking at, like, RPGs that we have in different tiers. Like, we've got Paladin's Quest in the D tier. I think this is a good deal better than Paladin's Quest. I would definitely give this one another shot far before I would give Paladin's Quest another shot. C tier, we've got something like Arcana, which is maybe a little bit closer to what I think this is. Although, I don't know. Like, we got Arcana, we got Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. I could definitely be convinced that I would have a better time digging into this, digging into Lufia and the Fortress of Doom than I would those other two games. So, and then we have the B tier where we've got, like, interesting things that are a little bit flawed, like Shadowrun and Secret of Mana.
Yeah. My feel is that this is probably a B tier game. Yes, this is just one of these, but I think this is a very good, well-made one of these. And if this kind of thing tickles you specifically, it's maybe better than that. So yeah. I would say B tier. Yeah, but
I definitely don't have as much nostalgia for the genre, so I am happy to defer to you on this one. So I am happy putting this in the B tier.
All right. So Lufia and the Fortress of Doom. Oh yeah, I just want to say also, it's very funny to see that logo because the word Lufia is like a bright rainbow colors, and then it's like, and the Fortress of Doom. It's a very funny image that I do not think they intended for it to be, but it delighted me a little bit to see that. So good job making it all the way to B tier, Lufia. And we'll check back in with this series sometime later for the game that is actually about what the first, like, 30 minutes of this game is about. So, yeah.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, because, that's what the sequel is. It's actually a prequel about those original heroes. So, you know, I'm curious about that, too. And I guess that's going to do it for us for this episode. Did you have anything else you wanted to say here before we get going? Get on the road.
We have been talking about how December 1993 has been a little bit of a rough patch, but you know, I mean,
this is my favorite episode. This is my favorite clutch of three games from December 93 that we've had. So,
okay. Well, I mean, you know, we've added two games to the B tier. We've added two games to the A tier.
That's true. We absolutely have. It's interesting that I said that about this one, given that the games are, like, I think we kind of agree not actually as good as those ones. So, yeah. But yeah. Well,
those were both fighting games, you know, where we had more of a mix here.
Right.
We got three in the C tier. And then, well, okay. We've got a lot in the D tier. Oh, we've got a lot to get through in the wrap.
But that does include multiple Koei games and at least one Super Scope game. So maybe not as many as it seems like we do.
That's true. That is true. So we'll see how all that goes. And then we will be done with 1993. It's kind of amazing to think we will finally be done with 1993.
We've been in it for so long.
We really have.
It's kind of amazing, honestly.
Yeah, and then it's off to 1994, where I think even more games came. I think that is the most...
That's the most prolific year for the Super Nintendo. Yeah, so buckle up, folks. It's going to be a long ride.
Yeah, yeah. How many games do we have?
We go in cross-country on that one. Well, so looking at 94... So 93 had 178 games. 94 is going to have 226. So, like 40 more games. More than 40 more games.
Yeah.
Than, so Yeah. Woof.
Yep.
But we're going to use this. We're going to use our new method for the for that. So we will not be stuck spending an inordinate amount of time talking about Radical Rex or Snow White and Happily Ever After, unless we want to.
Unless we want
to. So that's important. Al Unser Jr.'s Road to the Top. That's a game we're going to see in 94. Sorry. Let's go. Let's just wrap this one up. I could be here all day reading these things.
No worries. No worries. Yeah. So that's going to do it for today. Join us next time when we finally finish 1993.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Emmy Zero.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoaxe.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.